It has been a pleasure for me to be here in these services, the opening convention of Mid-America. It's a pleasure to be with Dr. Smith and Mrs. Smith, friends of ours for a long time, and whose fellowship we enjoy, and his ministry has my admiration, and his service as president of the college here is one of the great contributions of this day. And I rejoice in all the success, victory, and achievement that our church in the areas of his service have enjoyed. It's, of course, a delight to be with Brother Weathers, my first time to work with him in this capacity. I'm very fond of him personally. He almost as much as I am of his wife. Not quite, but almost. Well, skip it. He's a nice guy, and that's nice. Enjoyed the music. To be with the pastor and his lady, her sister Cunningham. I consider him one of our outstanding pastors anywhere in the church. He does well, and I'm comfortable with him here, speaking to you and leading on. And for you who are here for the first time, it's been quite a while, but I can remember when I first went away to college. I remember some of the emotions of insecurity and uncertainty which I had. I didn't have enough financial resources, and that contributed to some of my anxiety. And then I was going quite a ways away and didn't know anybody where I was going. And I remember that for about 3 days, the only 3 days in my life that I can remember that I was homesick. For those 3 days, never before or since. Of course, before I had no reason to be, because I was home. Easy to figure that out. And then after those 3 days were over and I got registered and a place of employment, I wasn't homesick anymore. But I watched some who didn't stay, who went home. And they made a mistake. They started retreating then and never did seem to get it stopped. But those who stayed and found the wonderful life of the college have enjoyed the benefits of that all through the years. This is a great place, purchased at some great cost, but it's meaningful, and it's for you to enjoy. Give it your best. Get all out of it you can, and make this a contributing factor to your life from now on. you will look back at it as a great period. Of course, when I went, I was backward and hard to meet people, and left-handed. What are you laughing about? How many of you left-handed? I see you have. Not quite a majority, but just quality. I got great encouragement the other day. I read that Leonardo da Vinci was left-handed. He's one of the greatest persons that ever lived. Talented, artistic, great sculptor. Made scientific investigations, was way ahead of his day. And they said one like him comes along about every 1,100 years. I checked it out, and I'm off schedule. Oh, I'll have to leave that role up to somebody else and just be ordinary like everyone, which is the best. The Bible is a great book. You never get to the place where you can't read it anymore. The truths that it stated are irrevocable. Becomes the standard of all great excellence of literature. It excels in those great revelations that fit the need of mankind. It opens vistas of challenge and opportunity. But the men and women that lived in its pages, those that in their day and their hour did something, who were able to serve in the hour that service was needed. Men and women who in time of adversity changed the entire tide of an empire or a generation, making you realize that somewhere in what God does for a man, there is greatness. Leaving you with anticipation, breathless with the thought that if God could do so much for them, then there is much in what he can do for me. You always realize that you could live greater than you are. That his power and his grace and his revelation are available for you in serving him. Times in which through adversity and difficulty a nation came to a recognition of God and his greatness. Like the time when the king in the days of Daniel made a great decree and said as a result of what Daniel had done that in every dominion of my kingdom, he said, men shall tremble and fear before God because he is great and steadfast, and in his kingdom there is no end. Just to be able to do something like that, and you know that it's wrapped up in what God is offering to you, and that's what makes the Christian life tremendous. And you get the idea, however, that these men in time of history and time of international need had an opportunity that we don't usually have. I think of the fact that Jesus Christ walked the Apostle Paul out as the great example of what he could do with somebody who was headed as much in the wrong direction as any man was ever headed. Turned him around and changed his entire way of life and He lived and became great and mighty. And in his writings we revel in the explanation of Jesus Christ and what he wants us to know. But it was his living that was tremendous. And the way he lived, we can live, and what he had, we can have. I like to read those testimonial statements of him. For example, in the first chapter of the book of Romans, in the 15th verse of that chapter, he's testifying, not preaching or explaining theology, just testifying about himself and his response to God when he said, "As much as in me is, I am ready." He's talking about preaching the gospel. He's talking about facing Rome, the great center of antagonism to Christ, the place of the Caesar's rule. "I am ready, as much as in me is." It wouldn't have been so meaningful if he hadn't have backed it up by his living. And I try to analyze what made him great and what made him go. It was the measure of his response to God. Too many times we get the idea that Christianity is just something we believe, when actually it's a life that we live. And we fail to put our faith to the practical application of our living, when it is indeed the daily practice of it that makes us successful and keeps us in victory. I noticed in the life of the Apostle Paul that we'll use as some kind of a pattern, because of the things that he said that were vital to him are available for us. He was very careful never to allow anything to substitute for his basic contacts with God. He was well versed in the literature of his day. He knew the Bible, the Old Testament, as few men knew it, and was able in his great spiritual acumen to see Christ in the fulfillment of its prophecies. And I am sure from what he wrote and the things he did that he was a man who kept himself in touch with God. And in his prayer and devotions, he kept up his faith and his courage and his victory. I believe that more people fail because they don't keep the simple basics of prayer and devotion in the scriptures to feed their souls. I am reminded that Christ said, "The words that I speak unto you, they are spirit and they are life." And I can say, let me read them again and again and yet again. For he has said that they are spirit and they are life. And when I read what he said, I am drinking at the fountain where strength cometh and where wisdom and truth resides. But to deviate here, to allow other things to creep in, to drift from this place, is slowly and surely tragedy. I remember one time I've always had a pretty good sense of direction. Always been able to tell which way was east and west and north and south. I have more trouble with that when I cross the equator and get down in the southern hemisphere. Then I have some difficulty. I don't know why they made hemispheres give me that much trouble. But anyway, everything's backwards. The sun's in the wrong, over the wrong shoulder at noonday, and none of the stars in the heavens seem familiar. But for the most part, and down there, the last time I was down there in New Zealand and Australia, I spent a major portion of my time mentally trying to get my directions right so that I could still know which way to go. Now, Mrs. Lewis has never been bothered with a sense of loss of direction. She has known hers all the time. both of them, up and down, but I've had some difficulty. I was touring a district a while back, and the DS had one of those compasses in the car. And I got in a kind of a contest with that thing. And we'd be driving along, and without looking at it, I'd say we're going west. And then I'd look at it, and there it was, west. Good compass. And one day as we were driving along, and I looked and thought we were going west, and the compass said we were going a little north of west. Without letting the DS know, I said to him, that compass you got here, I said, they tell me that they're not very accurate. Well, he said, this is a real good one. He said, I've had it. I've changed it from car to car. And he said, he looked at it again and said, yes, it's all right. He said, it so happens, right along this road, you're not going directly west. You're going a little north of west. I sat there and spent a little time being aggravated at the surveyor that didn't know where west was, whoever he was, whenever he surveyed it. Then as I began to think it over, I said to myself, now while that isn't too much, yet if a man keeps going by a wrong sense of direction, by the end of the day, you'd be way off from your goal. While this failure to do these things may not seem very important today, yet maintain that kind of an off course. Saying that you're on course doesn't do any good. You just fail and the power's gone and other things begin to eat in, and some of the trash that they offer as knowledge in the world today begin to substitute for the basics of the Bible. As much as in me is, I am ready. His life dedicated and given to God, his course true. And never at any time in his great life did you find him off course. So we can all pray tonight, oh God, in the path that winds like a silver ribbon across the hills ahead, keep me on course. He replies back to us, if you'll talk to me often, I'll reply to you. And my word always sets the straight path and the plain way. I think that many people fail to make it with God and salvation because they have a tendency to let the world crowd them off center. They draw back from life and all that it offers. The world tries to push the Christian into the position of being the speckled bird or the oddball. I remember one time when we were pastoring, we had a very nice family, and our son, who's now, of course, married and pastoring in the West, was a very small boy, and this couple didn't have any children, so they took quite a liking to our son, and they'd come over and get him and take him home with them, and we got friendly and saw quite a lot of them, and they were an interesting couple. He was one of these fine, outgoing fellows, but she was, when she'd come in, I'd say to her, how are you today? And she'd say, not very good. In fact, I'm feeling pretty bad. She went from doctor to doctor in the town, and whenever they'd check her over and tell her she's all right, that wouldn't make her feel good, just make her mad. She'd hunt another doctor. In fact, as near as I could tell, the only thing that kept her alive was the hopes that she might die. And I remember the most cheerful she ever was when she came in. A new doctor had moved into town. Said, how are you making it? Said, well, said, pretty good. Said, Dr. Gibbs, looks like he's going to find out what's the matter with me, and I may be in the hospital in a day or two. She was more cheerful that day than I'd seen her for a long time. Her husband passed on a long time before her. She lived way up in her 70s. Surprising how long you can live on that kind of a hope. Drawing back from life and its issues. I remember a young man one time when I was speaking at a gathering. He was a layman and an insurance salesman. Nazarene, we were there at a banquet in a youth gathering on a district. And he was one of the most refreshing fellows I ever saw. And he said to me, you know, Reverend, he said, you're a little bit shielded from the raw, the hard edges, he said, of life. But he said, out where I am, said, they pull no punches, and you face the smut and the dirt and the sin all the time. He said, the insurance company I work with, he said, I had trouble when I first got saved and trying to be reticent. But he said, I've come to know that the only way that you'll make it is to be natural and lead with your religion and have no hesitancy or timidity about telling anybody anywhere anytime why you live like you live and the faith you have and the God you love and serve. He said the other day they had a regional gathering of our insurance group, and they know my stand, at least the supervisor does. And he said, Fred, he said, you have to come. But he said, we're going to be serving cocktails at 6:30, and I know that you don't drink, and you can come at 7. We'll be ready to get into business then. Don't want you to be embarrassed at all. Oh, he said, I won't be embarrassed. Said, I'll be there 6:30. Said, just get me a bottle of soda pop, and everything will be fine. Said, I went in, past the table, there was a bottle of red soda pop. He said, I really would have liked another flavor, but I forgot to tell him what it was. So I took it and took the cap off, and I walked around. There they were drinking their cocktails, and a new guy came up to me. He said, I see that you don't drink. Oh, he said, I don't drink. He said, I haven't touched a drop since. And he said, I stood there. He had his cocktail glass. I had my strawberry pop, and told him how God saved me and how wonderful it was and how great life had been. He said, when I got through, he was standing there holding his cocktail glass around behind. Let him be embarrassed. He said, I didn't have any cause to be embarrassed about the thing. Oh, if we can learn that and walk out in faith and victory and make no hesitancy to tell the world about God and his presence for us, then God will walk with us and we'll increase in strength as the days and months and years go by, and a world needs to hear it so desperately. As much as in me is, I am ready. That's the basis on which to approach. That's the springboard for the tomorrows. Just that, the great and complete dedication. I think also, as I look around me and observe humanity in the church, that people sometimes have a tendency to back away from the consecration that they've made to God. I made one. God and I got together on the basis of a complete surrender on my part. It was complete surrender when I got saved. Forgive me for all my transgressions. When I sought him in the experience of holiness, I gave all away. I dedicated everything to him. I promised him. I didn't promise him a dime out of a dollar. I promised him the whole dollar. Of course, I didn't have any dollars. It's easy to make a promise when you don't have any finance at stake. But I made a consecration, and on that basis, I got through. I remember years ago, I was pastoring in Norman, Oklahoma. And I'd been up to Oklahoma City, about 18 miles away, and a member of the church was with me. We were making a hospital call, and one of the members was very ill. And we started back that afternoon, and during the day, they had what they have down there once in a while. They had too much rain in too small a space, a cloudburst. Right north of the city, there was a creek, and when we got there and started down, that creek was over the highway, and you could just see the edges of the bridge and the fence out there, and about 100 yards of water moving pretty fast, and a couple of cars there, and the highway patrolman. I eased on down to it, and just over there I could see the town. I was tired and I wanted to get on home. I said to the officer, I said, how deep's the water? Well, he said about hubcap deep, not too deep, but pretty swift. I said, are people still going through? Well, he said, sir, not all the way through. He said, you see that fender sticking up? And I saw it for the first time. He said, that's as far as the last one got. He said, we got him in that highway truck over there on the other side, got him out. He said, surprising how fast a guy can get out of a car if he has to. And he said, he made it, but the car's there. Well, I said, can I go through? Well, he said, we kept the truck there just in case anyone else wanted to try. You can get out fast and you don't make it. Oh, I said, I hate to go around. It'll be a couple of hours. I turned to the member by me and I said, what do you think? And he said, you know, sometimes, Reverend, the longest way around is the shortest way home. Always some guy to make an old crack like that, you know. And I, well, I said, I hate to go around. I believe, sir, to the officer, I'm going through. And I started the car and moved out into the water, and it was swifter than I thought it was going to be, and pulled at the wheel, and the member by me on the seat jumping around and saying, pull to the right, pull to the right. I said, shut up. I'm having enough trouble trying to get through here. We pulled out on the other side, and I heard a big sigh by me, and the member said, I knew you'd make it, Brother Lewis, I knew you'd make it. And he said, how'd you do it? I said, I knew if as I drove into that flood, I could line the center of my car's hood on that black line in the middle of that pavement and keep it there, never take my eyes off of it, I'd make it. But if I looked off to the right with the flow of the water, I'd lose my sense of direction. And so it is in the great, great program of life. It's the ability to do as the great writer said, look unto Jesus, the author and the finisher of your faith, and keep your vows and your standards and your consecration, and don't give up and turn aside because you found somebody else that does it. Even within the realm of Christian ethics, some of you come from churches and you see somebody doing something you hadn't thought you could do. You may not still be able to do it, and because they do it is no sign that it's all right for you. If you and God have made an understanding, stay with your principles. They aren't up for sale. They aren't for sacrifice. Live up to the consecration which you've made to God. As much as in me is, I am ready. Staying by and driving on. But I think probably the greatest which people miss is the challenge and the thrill and the opportunity of this hour, the challenge of today. This is a great day. This is a tremendous day. I said to a group of preachers the other day, if it were my choice to be a young preacher in the Church of the Nazarene, I'd want to be now. This is a tremendous day. In all my life, I've met people that think it's the worst day. I remember when I was in college, and preachers would come by, and some of them would talk about the old days until I was half put out at being born too late. I'd missed the best days. Then I'd meet some, and the only ones that were spiritual were them and two or three others. And the church, you know, the church went to the dogs so many years ago. At least they thought it was, but it's still going strong. Missing the challenge of this hour, this day. I remember a fellow the other day who had bought a brand new car. And he drove it out for me to see, and drove up in front of me and parked the car, threw on the brakes, and it rocked a little. And I looked at it, I said, "That's beautiful." I said, "If I'd take off my shoes and leave them here, would you give me a ride in it?" And so on. I was going along with him on his new car, and it probably had a mortgage bigger in the car, but we didn't mention that, just his new car. Big deal. But he said, "They don't make them like they used to." "Oh," I said, "they don't?" "No," he said, "they used to really make cars." He said, "Every time I buy one," he said, "it's a little worse." And he got out then, and he shut the door. He said, "Hear that door?" He opened it and slammed it again. I said, "I heard it the first time." Well, he said, "It's tin, just tin." He said, "That's all it is." Then he grabbed his fist and held it. He said, "If I push too hard," he said, "I can push it clear through." Gave a little bit. He said, "Used to be you couldn't do that." "Well," I said, "that's true. They make them different now than they used to." I said, "Yeah, I remember how they used to make them. I remember our first automobile we had when I was a kid." He said, "It's sure a lot different than now. 1918 Chevrolet. Lots of difference." I said, "I remember they brought it out, and the salesman did, and my dad was going to learn to drive it." And we got out in the pasture, and I begged for a ride in the rear seat. And I remember he got out there and was driving that thing and pulling on the wheel and hollering, "Whoa," and the thing wouldn't stop. He had to run it into a haystack to stop it. I said, "It's dangerous back there." I said, "It had the most beautiful side curtains on it you ever saw." I said, "We usually managed to get them on just after the rain quit. We never did." I said, "They had a thing you stuck into the front end of it and twisted to get it started, and sometimes picked yourself up off the ground when it turned the wrong way." I said, "Yeah, they sure make them different now." The other day I was being entertained at a home, and we got down to the dessert. It was a lovely meal, and the lady brought out some pie, and I'd never eaten any of that kind of pie. "Oh," I said, "this is good pie." I took a big bite and said, "This is, I think, nearly the best pie I ever ate." And a fellow there at the table, he said, "Did you ever eat any?" And he named another pie I'd never heard of. Said, "Never did." "Oh," he said, "never any pie like that." He said, "It's the greatest there is." I said, "How long has it been since you ate any of that pie?" Said, "I haven't had any for 15 years. I said, "Then shut up. Any pie that's 15 years old is too old to eat. Let me enjoy the pie I've got." Missing the challenge of today. But in the great area of serving God, in the great area of the opportunities, in this, the time of a great redemption, in the time of a decaying world, this is the time to live for Him and know His beauty and His peace and His power. And in a shabby day, walk in the beauty of holiness in the way that's straight, going to a tomorrow that's worthwhile. But it's in the lives of people that you see it. Just to see somebody magnificent in the time of a great testimony is so valuable. I think one of the great experiences of my life, next to and along with the one that I told you about this morning in the prayer for Reverend Andrew Young, had to do with another Nazarene preacher, a young one this time. He was pastor of a church in California and also the district secretary. And I learned when I went there to hold the district assembly that Jim Ballou was dying with malignancy of the lungs. He had spent several weeks in the hospital this past year, but he was at the assembly and he wanted to serve as district secretary. And we got along very well. He never talked about his illness. I never mentioned it to him. Sometimes he'd slip out the door and I'd hear him out there coughing and choking, struggling for breath. And I was always careful never to embarrass him, never to call for something for him to do while he was out there. He'd slip back in and take his place composed. go on and carry on his duties and call for the pastors. Time came when it was time for Jim to give his report. And I called his name, and he got up and walked down to the microphone. And out there, about 8-10 seats in front of him, sat his wife. Great audience became quiet. The assembly listened. Jim Ballou said, "I'm happy to give my report for my church in Monrovia." He said, "We've had a good year. We've taken in so many names by profession of faith. God has helped us and our budgets are paid. And I've made so many calls," and he went on in his report. And in the silence of the crowd, and this young man standing there to give his report, I became aware of the fact that we should really have taped this. This was probably his last one to an assembly here on earth. His wife never took her eyes off of his face. I got to watching her while he reported and wondered what she was thinking. Then he said, "God has blessed me wonderfully this year. In some ways, this has been the greatest year of my life." He said, "I'm going back to serve my church this next year." He said, "I don't ask for any special favors of God." He said, "All that I have is His. I settled all of that when I prayed through and He sanctified me. Whatever He wants to do is what I want. Whatever He plans is best for me." And he closed his report, simple. But as he said those things, I said to myself, that which I've read about in the Bible is being portrayed and revealed in the life of this man who looks there at his wife and remembers his four children and can say with no pity, "All I want is what God wants for me. Whatever He desires will be best." Oh, that's tremendous. Came back, and I found it hard to get my voice to say that his character was passed. We went on through the assembly. We came to the adjournment. I said, "Jim, nice to work with you. Pleasure to see you. You had a good report. Hope you have a wonderful year." We shook hands. And I walked this way, and he walked through the door to his office. And I turned, looked at him as he went through the door. The strange feeling that this is my last time, see. It was. A little while after the assembly, he went to the hospital. He was there about 6 weeks in his dying. It was a Catholic hospital. And when he passed away, the head sister came to Mrs. Ballou as she came out of his room. She said, "Mrs. Ballou, I and the nurses with me have had the privilege of attending your husband in these hours of his dying." She said, "I don't know much about your church, but does your church have any way to make a saint out of a man? If it doesn't, then I would like to have our priest make a saint out of your husband. If anybody deserved to be a saint, he does." Mrs. Ballou said, "Oh, yes, yes. That's all been taken care of." And the Catholic lady was relieved and said, "I'm glad. I didn't really know." She said, "I don't know whether we'd be welcome, but if you'd let us, we'd like to come to his funeral. We've never seen anybody like him. And we'd like to be there." And there were two seats filled with them. And I guess that the grandeur, the simple peace, greater than life and death, that that young man had is one of the unforgettable moments of my life. And I realize that what Paul said back there works today. praise his holy name forever. May life be that great for you. And may you have that kind of peace and that dedication. Like Jim Ballou and the Apostle Paul, and like you can have if you wish. Our Father, we feel close to you tonight, close to you. We realize we're living in a troublesome and momentous time in the world. We thank thee for the scores of those that have knelt here at the altar to pray. We pray that on this last night, there's still some adult, some young person who doesn't know that contentment, that they may seek it and find it and be at peace with thee. A dedication so complete that those great testimonies of the Bible shall be the echo of their experience. Let it be so. Let it be so. And tonight, as in other nights, in simplicity and quietness, with only the voice of the Spirit speaking, I suggest to anyone, and there have been so many that have received help, and some that have come to me and have settled it. But there are so many here tonight that's missing life and God. But tonight you could come and begin with him and meet the challenge of today. You just slip out of your seat where you are. That's the way we've been doing it. With no pressure, only the pull of his Spirit. And I think if you really mean business, that's the way you'll come anyway. What young man, young woman, what person would say, I'm tired of the ordinary and the usual? This is my opportunity. Life moves on. Tomorrow is uncertain. I need to get with it. And I'm going to tonight. I'd like to come. To be saved. To be sanctified. To be reclaimed. There's some men here, some women here, not just students, but others, need to come. How about it? Would you do it tonight? Oh, how real his presence, how kindly he calls. I have preached and left it up to him, and you've responded so beautifully to him. Who else is coming while we tarry a moment in the awesome silence of his nearness? Coming. Yes, they're coming. They're coming. Are you coming? Are you coming tonight? Anybody yet? I believe we'll stand and all sing that softly before we gather to pray. Softly and prayerfully. Somebody yet needs to come. Somebody yet.